We're talking about the real F word, okay? This is the real F word that none of us really like, and it's the word forgiveness. And we don't really like having to be in the position of having to ask for it. You know, I don't know of anybody that just loves to say, you know, one of my favorite things to do in life is to go ask someone else for forgiveness, you know. You just never hear that, you know. But what we usually are up against is the fact that we are going to offend people, and other people are going to offend us. It's just the way that it is. Jesus even said so. He looked at his disciples one time and says, does this offend you? And he goes, well, guess what? There's going to be bigger offenses than this. And what he was trying to point out to them is that one of the key, if not the key ingredient to those who follow after Jesus Christ is learning to live a life of forgiveness. And we're going to talk about that this morning as to what that means. I want us to go back to the central verses that we've been looking at. And I want us just to kind of say this out loud this morning as a prayer. This is what King David prayed. It's the verses we've used each week just to kind of remind ourselves of how short our life is. So I want you to read this with me, okay? I think that you can do this, all right? You all are awake, correct? If not, slap the person next to you. That'll give you a good laugh, and it'll wake them up, all right? So here we go, Psalm 39, 4 and 5. Lord, remind me how brief my time on earth will be. Remind me that my days are numbered and that my life is fleeing away. My life is no longer than the width of my hand. An entire lifetime is just a moment to you. Human existence is but a breath. And that's the prayer that King David even prayed. You know, the Bible records that he was the man after God's own heart. That was God's statement about David. And David realized, man, my life is short. I need to maximize it. I need to leverage it for all that it's worth. And so that's what we're going to look at this morning. If you want to go ahead and turn in your Bibles, Matthew chapter 18, the little Bible's there in front of you that's on page 839. If you like that little Bible there in front of you, you don't have to ask anybody's permission to take it. We've given away dozens of these to people that said, hey, I kind of like this. It's small. I can take it around with me wherever I go. And so they like the way that it reads. So you don't have to ask anybody's permission. You don't have to feel weird. Just when you leave out this morning, take it with you. That's free and a gift from us to you. Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 through 35 is where we're going to be here in just a minute. I think we all know this story. We've heard this story growing up. It's talked about, it seems like, at athletic events and in life in general. But the people of Troy were fighting the Greeks, and the Greeks were not doing that great, but they weren't doing that badly either. And they realized that they've got to come up with something in order to get inside of Troy. Troy had lost a lot of people, and certainly the Greeks had lost a lot of people. And so what happened one evening was, as they came out and they looked out and they saw this weird thing sitting outside the gates. So the high council was all pulled together to figure out, hey, what are we going to do with this thing? The Greeks, we can see them off in the distance getting on their ships to leave out. What do we do with this thing? So there was this raging debate on what it was. And the high council finally established that, hey, this is the Greeks' gift to us, knowing that they have really hurt us bad but didn't defeat us, and realized they need to make some sort of restitution. So they've given us this thing. And so they send out people to roll this in, and we all know it as the Trojan horse. And so it comes in and sits there, and overnight, what they don't know is that the Greeks are inside, and that the Greek ships that had supposedly left have come back in. And then at some point in time during the night, they had it all set up, and the Greeks come out of the horse, and they take over Troy. And you know, when we look at things like hurt for offenses, all of those things, if we're not really careful, we can harbor things in our heart and harbor bitterness in our heart where we think that we're really getting back at somebody for offending us, or someone who's abused us, or someone who's hurt us, or someone who's humiliated us. And all it is this thing that we think, well, I'll show them. And we invite this Trojan horse of bitterness and hatred and malice and anger into our hearts. And we think it's going to do us some good, and it ends up destroying us as a person. I want you to look at Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 to 35. Jesus has just been talking to his disciples about, hey, if someone offends you, this is kind of what you need to do to make some corrections. Don't go around gossiping. You need to go to them and talk with them. And then in verse 21, one of his disciples, Peter, says, then Peter came to him and asked, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? 7 times? No, Jesus replied, 70 times 7. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven can be compared to a man who decided to bring his accounts up to date with servants who had borrowed money from him. In the process, one of his debtors was brought in who owed him millions of dollars. He couldn't pay, so the king ordered that he, his wife, his children, and everything he had be sold to pay the debt. But the man fell down before the king and begged him, oh, sir, be patient with me, and I will pay it all. And the king was filled with pity for him, and he released him and forgave his debt. But when the man left the king, he went to a fellow servant who owed him a few $1,000. He grabbed him by the throat and demanded instant payment. His fellow servant fell down before him and begged him for a little more time. Be patient, I will pay it, he pleaded. But his creditor wouldn't wait. He had the man arrested and jailed until the debt could be paid in full. When some of the other servants saw this, they were very upset. They went to the king and told him what had happened. Then the king called in the man he had forgiven and said, you evil servant, I forgave you that tremendous debt because you pleaded with me. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had mercy on you? Then the angry king sent the man to prison until he had paid every penny. And Jesus says some very harsh words. He said, that's what my heavenly Father will do to you if you refuse to forgive your brothers and sisters in your heart. You know, when I first read that, I think, well, you know, Peter came and somebody had kind of done him wrong. And Peter knew that Jesus always required a little bit more than what the law stated. Okay, for as much talk as what goes on in the Christian circles of this word called grace and versus law, okay, you know, like law is, hey, you know, you got to follow everything, and grace is, hey, you know, grace is above that. It always amazes me that those who talk about, well, I'm under grace, I'm not underneath the law, always go to the lesser side of things. When Jesus talked about grace, he always went to the greater side of things. If he says, you know, the law requires you, and he would say this all the time, those of you who've been around Christianity and you know Jesus' words, you know that he taught this. He says, hey, if someone asks you to go a mile, you go with them too. The law said 1 mile, okay? That's what they were required to do. If a Roman soldier went up to you during that day and time and said, you got to carry my equipment a mile, that was law. You had to do that. And Jesus said, you know, if the Roman officer comes to you and asks for 1 mile, you go with him too. And I'm surprised that in this day and age that people that say, well, I'm under grace, I don't have to do that. It's like Jesus never devalued anything. He always gave it more value. Peter knows this. So he looks at Jesus and he says, hey, you know, I've got this guy. He just keeps offending me. I've got this friend. There's this lady. She just keeps offending me. There's this boss. He just keeps offending me. And he says, you know, should I forgive him 7 times? I mean, this is a whole lot more than what Peter felt like he should. And Jesus replies with an astounding answer. He says, no, 70 times 7. Now, for those of us who do math, we'd go, oh, well, good, once I get to this number. You and I both know that's not what Jesus was saying was to count. But what he was saying was, Peter, you're way off. Now, I can kind of handle it with Peter because I'm like, I don't know what happened, but it doesn't maybe appear on the surface to be that bad of a thing. But I'm sitting there wondering, this not only applies to Peter, it applies to us as well. And I thought, how harsh of a statement for someone who's been abused that would go to Jesus and say, Jesus, how many times must I forgive this person? Would Jesus change his statement? And the answer is no. It's easy for me to look at Peter and say, come on, Peter, I mean, how bad could it be? But I really don't know. I'm just assuming. And I look at someone who has been on the other side of adultery, the one who has lost all their trust in the other person, and they go to Jesus and go, man, this has happened. Maybe not just once, maybe a couple times. How many times must I forgive? And see, it's real easy for me to look at Peter, and maybe it is for you as well, to look at him and say, well, it couldn't have been that bad. But let's go a little deeper. What about a person who's been the victim of abuse? That's a pretty harsh statement. Now think about this. Jesus says, not only are you to keep forgiving, but in the end, he gives this harsh statement. That's what my heavenly Father will do to you if you refuse to forgive your brothers and sisters in your heart. I can't imagine a person who's been abused coming to me and saying, hey, this was the person who did it. I'm mad, I'm angry, I'm, you know, all these emotions. And then to look at him and not only say that you've got to forgive him, but if you don't forgive, this is what God's going to do to you. Man, that is stinging. And as much as we have certainly looked at Jesus as this guy that always helped the poor and always helped the ones who are down and out, it begs the question, why would he say not just that they have to forgive, but if they choose not to forgive, that God's going to hold things against them? It just seems so out of balance. It seems so uncompassionate, so un-Jesus-like. But Jesus has his reasons, and that's what we're going to look at this morning. Here's usually what I found in my years of being around people and being in the pastor and counseling people. Here's the objections that I usually hear to someone who's got to go through a time of really deep forgiveness. First objection is this: if I forgive, I am saying it was okay, and it gives him the right to do it again. Because when forgiveness comes around that we're supposed to give it to somebody else, we feel so cheated. And when you look at the abuse victim, what they will talk about is feeling cheated. It's usually one of the key words that they use. Someone who has been the victim on the other side of the adultery thing will say, I feel what? Cheated. I feel let down. I feel in some ways abused, or trust. I can't trust them will be the phrase that you hear. And when you listen to their phrases and you listen to their talk, it's really hard to look at them and say, you know, we just need to try to get through some steps of forgiveness here, because in their mind, here's what they're thinking. That person stole something from me, and if I forgive them, I'm saying it was okay. And not just that it was okay, but it's okay to do it again. Here's what we have to realize. Forgiveness was never destined for the person that offended. Forgiveness was a gift by God to the person who was offended. And that's hard. But if we're not careful, we bring in bitterness just like the Trojan horse. And we bring it into our lives and we're like, man, I'm going to get them back. I am going to take them on. I am going to show them and I'm going to pay them back. You better believe I'm not going to forgive them, because if I forgive them, it's telling them that it was okay to do it. And do you hear what's happening in their heart? You pick up on it, don't you? We've all seen it in our own lives. Somebody's offended you. Somebody's done something bad to you. Somebody's lied to the boss, said they did a project when you know they didn't. It was you. You've been ripped off before. Somebody's stolen something from you. You know what it's like. You know what it's like to sit there and go, I'm going to get somebody. I'm going to take them out. I'm going to humiliate them in front of everybody. And you know something? Forgiveness is the gift for the one who is offended, not for the offender. Because here's what I know. God's retribution and God's retaliation is greater than anything you will ever be able to do. Even those people that go to the ultimate extreme of taking someone else's life because of an offense, you can't touch the soul. Only God can do that. And what I have tried with people to do, and it's a hard process. This is not easy. Jesus didn't say it would be easy. He's just telling you what leads to freedom, and that's his goal. He is looking at people and saying, if you want to live in freedom, you have to learn how to forgive. And it's not going to be easy because we have this thing called a memory, don't we? And we replay it in our minds. I don't know about you, but I'll think of some offense that happened. Somebody cuts you off in traffic. Maybe it's something that happens to you at work, or a friend did something absolutely terrible to you. And I don't know about you, but I can get this incredible conversation going on in my mind. You ever had those conversations in your mind? When I see them next, this is what I'm going to say. I mean, for some of you, you may stand up in front of the mirror and do it, you know, just so that you can see your facial expressions. You're like, no, I don't want to do that. I want to do that, you know, because that looks me, you know, I'm going to. And you go through these conversations in your mind of next time they say that, then I'm going to say this. And then I know that they always say this. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to trump that because I'm going to come back with this. And then I'm going to humiliate in front of everybody. And everybody's going to stand up and cheer me and go, yeah. You ever had those conversations before? Man, I have. You know, somebody cuts you off in traffic. You're like, man, at the next light, I'm going to show them. Vroom, vroom, you know, they won't look over. And you're like, you better not look. You know, I will come out of this car. You don't know what you're going to do, but you're going to come out of that car, you know. But you always have these plans and all these conversations going in your mind. And you know what's happening? You've lost freedom. Because guess who is controlling you? The idiot in the car next to you. Just let him be an idiot, okay? And I have to tell myself that all the time, okay? You know, because Sherry cuts me off in traffic, and I'm like, no, I'm kidding. You know, my wife doesn't do that. But, you know, when I see that happen, man, I just start seeing it. I'm like, they're an idiot. They need an idiot sign on their vehicle so everybody else knows if they get cut off, oh, well, they're an idiot, you know? This is who they are. This is what they do. And I just replay these conversations in my mind of, oh, if I ever talk to that person again, I'm going to tell them what for. And you know what's happened? I've given them control over my life. I'm not walking in freedom. I know there's going to be some people in here that are victim of abuse or mistrust or whatever it might be, and I'm going to tell you, it is not easy. It will never be easy for you just to say, okay, I forgive. But if you want to walk in freedom, that's the direction that you've got to go. And Jesus laid it out right in front of us and said, guys, gals, this is what the kingdom of heaven's all about. This is how you're going to learn to walk in freedom, and you leave it at God's feet. I know that sometimes we go to the second objection to forgiveness. They need to pay. You know, I'm going to make sure that they pay. I'm going to make sure that they're humiliated or that people know about this. Let me ask you this question. Have you ever been around that person who certainly has been the victim of something? Okay, this is not an unreal situation, but been the victim of something. And they're around you at work, or they're in a small group with you, or something like that, and they will retell that story over and over and over and over. And you can tell, man, they're never going to get past this. They tell the same story. And people respond with the same response of trying to be compassionate, trying to be helpful. But after a little while, it's like, you're telling the story every single time. We know the story. And you watch it, and you begin to realize this person's not walking in freedom. They're stuck. I mean, life moves on. You don't get a choice of what time that you live in. You're always moving forward. But yet, they're stuck way back here. And they begin to keep telling that story in the hopes, I guess, that the gossip will finally catch up with whoever that it was, and everybody will rise up against them and, you know, go and defeat them or embarrass them or humiliate them. And you know something? There's no freedom there. Maybe that person is you. And again, I'm not saying that it's easy. Jesus didn't say, oh, you know, it'd be simple. Because it's going to be a struggle. But I know too many people who have chosen to live in bondage, and they've let that Trojan horse of bitterness and anger and resentment and malice, and I'm going to get retribution. And here's what I'm not saying, and this is what Jesus is not saying. He's not saying that if an offense happens, if it's a legal thing, that you're not supposed to take legal action, okay? God set up governments. He's very clear in his scripture, very clear. He set up governments to protect the people, bottom line. Okay? It's all throughout Scripture. You have a right to be able to say this was a wrong that was committed. But you know something? When you take it into your own hands, that's when the line is crossed. That's when God backs off and says, wait a second, wait a second, wait a second. I've forgiven you of a lot of things. And this is usually where people bring up the objection of, well, I wasn't as bad as them. And you know what God is saying? All of your sins, whether you think they're big or whether you think they're small, were big. And that's God's perspective. Because Jesus knows this. He's on a journey to the cross. He knows exactly where he's going. He knows exactly what your sin and my sin did to put him there. So no matter how great of a person that you may think that you are, your sin was enough, if no one else had lived, to put Christ on the cross. Bottom line. And that's why God says, I've forgiven you millions. You need to understand that the other person has certainly done something wrong. Jesus didn't say they didn't do anything wrong. But what he said was, you've got to learn to walk in that forgiveness, because here's the deal. If you and I decide we're going to pay somebody back, God backs off and says, all right, whatever you do to them is what you're going to do to them, but I'm not going to enter into it now. And here's what I know. I can only be in one place at one time, okay? All right, I'm confined. I can't always haunt that person for the rest of their life. Okay, as much as I may want to try, I can't be there 24/7, but God can. And don't ever think that what's going on in their outside is what's going on the inside, because people are great at faking it. People are great at saying, oh, no, it doesn't bother me at all. God invented the soul. He knows how to make it hurt. He knows how to send leanness to the soul. In other words, emptiness. He knows how to make their life miserable, that you and I could never go to that point. That's where you have to learn to give it to God. Here's a GPS for this morning. If you know about GPS systems, they tell you exactly where you are at any point in time with about a millimeter, probably not even that much of being off. But I call it good practical stuff, okay? And this is something you can take with you and you can watch and maybe even see it in your own life. Hurt people hurt people. I want you to think about that. Hurt people hurt people. Those who have been injured, those who have been hurt, are usually one of the first ones that lash out and strike at somebody else. Because you may look like or act like or do something that reminds them of a previous event, previous time in their life, you better look out. Hurt people hurt people. It's just the way that it is. Until you learn how to begin to live a life of forgiveness. And once you begin in your heart to realize, okay, all right, God knows what was right and what was wrong. You're going to feel cheated. You will always feel cheated, okay? Mark that down. You will always feel cheated. You'll always feel like somebody took something from you when that offense occurs. But when you leave it in God's hands, you don't become that hurt person who turns around and hurts other people. And when you look at our day and time today, our contemporary time, isn't that what usually happens? We talk about the victims of certain thing, and a lot of times, you know, they say children of alcoholics tend to become what? Alcoholics. We all know this. Children of abuse situations tend to, not always, do what? Abuse. What happened? They know the danger of it. They know the hurt of it. Why would they do it? I mean, we're all left wondering, why would they do that? Why would they do that? The Trojan horse of bitterness and anger and resentment has come into their life, and they don't realize they're becoming just exactly like the person that they hate. It is absolutely true. You always become like the people that you hate. You may say, no, not me, not me. You will if you hate them. You may dislike them. You may say, well, I don't like that attitude. I don't want to do that. But you have a strong tendency as a human being to become like the people that you hate. It's just the way that it is. Someone mouths off to you, what do you want to do? And you hate it, right? So what do? You have a tendency to do what? Mouth off, right? Someone yells at you. First couple of times, you may walk away, But at some point in time, what do you have a tendency to do? Come back up to their level. You have a tendency to become like the people that you hate. And that's where we have to guard our hearts at all costs to make sure that we become the right type of person. Here's the third objection. I'll try forgiving, but I won't forget it. Okay. Here's what you need to know. You'll never forget it. You don't have to try not to forget it. You'll never forget it. And here's where I think most people go wrong. They actually think that forgiving will lead to forgetting. You're not wired to forget. You don't have a delete key. If you're equipped with one, you need to market this thing, because there are people that would love to forget certain parts of their lives. But you're not equipped with that. God did not equip you with that. Here's what I would tell you, just the opposite. The key to forgiving is to actually remember, because what I've found out in all my years, those people that suppress all of those hurts and all of those offenses usually do what one day? Like a volcano. And you've been around it in your families, you've been around it with friends, and it surprised you and it shocked you. The person that was quiet was the one that acted out, right? Isn't that what you hear on the news? Well, he was always the quietest, right? It's what happens. We begin to suppress and think, everybody tells us, don't bring it up, don't bring it up, don't bring it up. Your first step to forgiveness is this. Three things. First one, you need to charge the defendant. You may say, well, now, wait a second, I thought you said we're supposed to forgive. Yeah, this is your process. If you see forgiveness as a way of just saying, oh, well, it never really happened, that's not forgiveness. Jesus never did look at Peter and say, well, Peter, that stuff never really happened. He said, you have a valid complaint, but here's what you need to know. God's got a bigger complaint against you. So here's what you need to do. The first thing is you need to charge the defendant. You need to call it what it was. You need to say, God, this person abused me physically, and that hurt, and it feels like this. It feels like someone cheated me. It feels like someone took something from me that I can never regain. You need to call it what it is, and don't suppress it, and don't think that, well, it'll go away one day, and one day I'll, you know, time heals all wounds. Time doesn't heal anything. Time doesn't heal anything. Matter of fact, the phrase that we'll often use is this. The more I thought about it, the what? The madder I got. Well, the more I thought about it was in time, right? Again, that's over a length of time. Time doesn't heal wounds. God heals wounds. God heals wounds. And he wants to heal yours, and he wants to heal mine. And it's going to take a process. It's not a one day waking up saying, I forgive. It's going to take a process. So here's that first step in the process. Charge the defendant. Just name it what it was. Call it what it was. Second thing is this. You got to drop the charge. Okay? Call it what it is, but then you've got to drop the charge, and you've got to be willing to say, okay, God, help me to get past this. Now, here's what I know, and here's what I advise people. If someone keeps hurting you, you don't have to hang around them. Jesus never said, keep going back. He just said, if they keep offending you, learn how to forgive. But he never said, make sure you hang around those people. You'll enjoy your life, okay? Even Jesus knew who not to hang around, right? He didn't hang around with the Pharisees and all the religious leaders of the day. Why? Because he couldn't stand them. And they were arrogant, and they took advantage of the people. Who did he hang out with? The drunkards, the prostitutes, the people that no one else wanted to hang around. His 12 disciples were guys that couldn't make it in the religious world, so that's why they were fishing and doing all this other stuff, okay? That's the people he hung around. So he knew who to hang around. When the Pharisees came around, you could tell Jesus didn't like them because he knew what they were doing to other people. You don't have to hang around those people, all right? You don't have to do that. That's not what God's going to ask you to do. The third thing that you have to learn to do is not only drop the charge, but you have to dismiss the case. If you've ever been in this situation, I think all of us had, where someone reminded you of something that you did 5 years ago, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, you didn't really forgive me if you keep bringing it up, right? Well, all right, we've already talked about that 20 times. It's time to let that go. You have to dismiss the case. And here's the key in all of it. When I talked about you have to learn how to remember, okay, and not think, well, I'll just try to forget it because that just suppresses it. You can't rely on feelings to tell you if you've dismissed the case or not, because your feelings will play tricks on you. Because here's what will happen. You'll go through it and you'll say, okay, God, I remember it. That is exactly what happened. No exaggeration, no under-exaggeration. Here's what it was. This is what they did. Second part, okay, I'm not going to pull those charges against them. I'm going to learn to forgive. I'm going to learn to move on under God's grace because he's forgiven me. I want to learn to forgive other people, and I want to live in freedom. I don't want to live in bondage. I don't want to have a Trojan horse of bitterness in my life. That's what I'm going to do. And then when you get to dismiss the case, you're going to think, oh, well, this will never come up again till you see him the next time. When you see him the next time, what does it do? And then you're like, oh, but I tried to forgive him, and now I can't. You never rely on feelings to tell you if you forgave him or not, because your feelings will still be strong. You're still going to have some anger and resentment trying to get inside of you, and what you have to do is you have to go through those steps. That I already know what they did wrong. Clearly, God knows what they did wrong, and he's going to seek justice. Secondly, I've already charged him with this stuff, and I've already said, we're moving on. I've already dismissed this case. You can't rely on feelings. If you rely on feelings, you're going to then battle yourself of saying, I just can't forgive. I just wish I could forgive. I just can't do this thing called a Christian life because I... No. Feelings have nothing to do with it. It's what you do with those feelings. Because you can't turn on and off that. You know that with love. You can't turn on and off love. You can't one day say, well, I love this person. Next day, well, I don't think so. Well, yeah, I really love them. You know, I don't know. Next day, I don't think I really love them. That's just weird. You know, no one wants a relationship like that. We know that either you do or you don't. It's one of the two. It's not an emotion that you turn on one day and turn off the next. And God's called us to be a person of forgiveness. Now, here's the deal, and this is kind of where the, you can forgive the pun, the hammer meets the nail. But when Jesus was on his way to the cross, he had a lot of people to forgive. And as a matter of fact, it is so interesting that throughout that time that they were yelling things at Jesus, telling him to perform miracles, is he really who he says he was? And he certainly could have taken them out if he wanted to. He winds up saying very little to nothing. Matter of fact, the only people that he really speaks to in conversations are to some people around him. But all the government officials are yelling at him to say, you know, are you really the Christ and stuff like that. And he only says basically one sentence to Pilate. And he says, hey, you know, you're the one that says that I am. And they're like, what, what? And Pilate, you know, gets upset and says, well, you know, get out of here, and declares him an innocent man. Next court sees him, declares him an innocent man, but yet they hand him over to be crucified. Now, here's a guy that's innocent. Not a guy that's guilty, a guy that's innocent. And now then he's having to live out what he said to forgive. I want you to watch this video as we kind of cue this thing up here. And this just kind of walks you through the last 2 days of Christ being here on this earth. And as we look at that statement that the Roman guard said, surely this man was innocent of anybody who could have said, I choose not to forgive because I was completely innocent. It would have been Jesus. And now then Jesus has to live out his words that he told to Peter. And he does it valiantly. As a matter of fact, in Luke chapter 23, verse 34, it says, Jesus said, Father, forgive these people because they don't know what they are doing. You know something? Ignorance does not equal innocence. Jesus knew that even though they were being ignorant, that didn't make them innocent. And he could have lashed out. He could have done whatever he wanted to do. But he modeled what he had taught through the roughest of circumstances, far beyond what you and I probably will ever have to experience. And I want you to know, those of you who are here this morning that have been through a relationship of mistrust or abuse or whatever it might be, I cannot tell you that it will be easy. And Jesus is not promising that it will be easy. It will be tough. But there is a road to freedom, and it's only found through forgiveness. And that's the path that Christ commands us and instructs us to go, not because he's mean, not because he's being cruel, but because he knows as a human being where you've got to be in order to live a life of freedom. You're never going to forget. And I don't think that's the goal. Matter of fact, I know it's not the goal. But you can live the life of freedom of saying, you know, I don't have to become like the people that I hate. I don't have to go that direction. I can go an entirely different direction. That's the life that Christ offers. Is it the easy way to go? No, it's not the easy way to go. If it was easy, everybody would do it, right? But it's the way to go if you want to live in freedom. And again, I say to any of you who's been through just a terrible situation, Christ knows it. He feels compassion in that area. He's not going to say that it's easier. It was no big deal. He's going to agree with you. It was a big deal. It hurt. It cost. You feel taken from. You feel cheated. You feel like someone has stolen something from you, and you will probably always feel that way. But he stands ready to help you in his grace. And so this morning, this is the prayer that I would encourage you all to pray, and it's one that I have to pray into my own life. And you don't have to necessarily write this down because it's not the words, it's the attitude of the heart, but maybe you just simply want to go to God and say, Father, this is what this person did. Okay, there's the charge. It hurt. I feel like someone stole something from me or cheated something from me, and this is how it feels. But I also know that you've asked me to forgive. And I want to forgive that person, but I don't know how. But I also don't want to live a life of bitterness and anger and resentment and blow up at the people that I really do care about. And so, God, give me your grace to deal with this. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes this morning. I don't know what background that you came from. You may have had a great home life. You may have had a horrific one. You may have had a relationship that you thought, wow, this person will always love me, and they didn't. You may have had a relationship at work where you thought, wow, this person will always be in my corner, and man, they betrayed you. They took the position that you wanted, and you thought they were going to help you, and they ended up taking advantage of a friendship. For some of you in this room, it may be that there's just been a lot of offenses through your family. People don't understand you. People don't understand where you're coming from, and they constantly make digs at you. They constantly degrade you or humiliate you in front of the family, and you know that, man, here comes Thanksgiving, here comes Christmas. How quickly can I get out and get back to my home? And maybe you just need to visualize that person who's hurt you And it may not be a visualization that you necessarily want to go back to, but I would encourage you to go there and maybe go back to that moment of the greatest offense. And maybe just ask Jesus in that moment, while you're visualizing that moment, just to walk in and ask him what he thinks. What does Jesus say about that situation? And I doubt you're going to find him with a look of no big deal. I have an idea, the visualization that you probably just pictured is one of compassion, of one of him looking at you and saying, this was absolutely wrong. You are absolutely correct. And maybe you had a visualization of him reaching out to you or hugging you or whatever, maybe even crying with you. And maybe you just need to look back into his eyes where he looks at you and says, I know what it's like to be innocent and for people to take something from me. I know what it's like to hurt. I know what it's like to feel all alone. I know what it's like to feel betrayed. I know what it's like to just be stripped of all dignity and be humiliated. And maybe you need to see Jesus in that moment, walking you through some steps of forgiveness. I doubt you're going to be able to accomplish them all this morning. If you do, that's great. But this may take months. It may take years. But God's more interested in your direction than he is just a moment in time. And so maybe this morning, you're just at that first step. You're willing to charge the defendant. And maybe 3 months from now, you cross over and you're willing to say, you know, okay, I'm going to learn how to forgive this. And then you finally dismiss the case. It may take 2 years, 5 years. But why don't you take the hand of Jesus this morning and let him walk you down the journey of forgiveness so that you won't become like the people that you hate. Father, I'm not perfect. I don't have it all together. There's been people in my life that have done some very ungodly, horrible things. And Father, no matter how bad of those things that it could be, nothing compared to what you went through. But Father, it still hurts. And it's just hard for me to believe that you felt all these things because you're supposedly God, but yet supposedly human. And can you just block all those things? But it's obvious that you took them all in and you took them all upon you. So, Father, help me in my own life to forgive those who offend me, that I would walk in your forgiveness so that I will be free. I just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. I want to encourage you, if you're new with us, to fill out one of those connection cards and just put it in the offering box. Maybe during this song that we're about to sing, you just want to reflect on some hurts, some offenses. Maybe you were the offender. Maybe you need to go to somebody and ask for forgiveness. And one other thing that I hear Christians say all the time, and it's just so unbiblical and it's not right, forgiveness never relies on the fact of someone else coming to ask you for forgiveness. And I've heard Christians say that, I don't know how many times, you know. Well, I'll forgive them if they come and ask. It's not in the Bible anywhere. There's nothing. You notice what Jesus did? He didn't say, well, if they come to you. He said, forgive them. Don't go down that road. It's not the road you want to go down. So let's reflect as we sing this morning.